session number 10602, reel 13.
You were describing the physical efficiency tests and talking about your need to pass those. So a certain amount of the day was put aside so that people could keep physically fit.
Oh, yes.
Apart from running and team sports, what else could you do?
Oh, whatever sport, or what, if you wanted to walk, you could. Most organised sports was done after tea, but first period in the morning was usually physical training. It would be classed as physical training, but it would be not organised in that the old company did the same thing. The NCO or the warrant officer would come out and say, anyone wants to go swimming? And the lads who wanted to go swimming would just put the hands up, and he'd say, right, off you go. If somebody wanted to go for a practice running or jumping or five-a-side hockey, he would just say, who wants to play hockey? Who wants to do this? Or who wants to play football? And you'd do that until the parade time ended. And then you'd finish that, go and, if you were sweaty, you would go and have a cold shower, quick cold shower, dry yourself, and then go and get your breakfast, as everybody did, as the parade finished at the same time. This was normal with our battalion. But after tea, teams would be picked, and you would have to, if you weren't on duty, which was guard duty then, that time of the night, if you weren't on guard duty, you would be expected to turn out and play. Because the sports ground would be allocated to a company, and companies used to take the turns because the old, you know, there wasn't enough playing grounds for everybody to go at the same time. And it was common practice for one platoon to play another platoon. But in organised games, a company would play a company, and you'd all go and cheer your company or support your company wherever you could.
What sort of games were played?
Generally football, hockey. At the annual, the once a year, there used to be all the distances in running up to a mile. There would be 100 yards, 200 yards. There would be 880, a mile. I was never much good at those distances. I was too slow for them.
What was your speciality?
Long distance. I was reasonably... I took part in a number of battalion runs, and I got to 13th out of 1,000, and I was also in the company team. And then we used to play cricket. Some of us used to play cricket. We went at a cricket and regiment, we went at a rugby regiment. We played it, but we went at, you know, known for it. And we got an officer, came to the battalion, a young officer, and he couldn't understand why we were such a good regiment and we couldn't play rugby. And he was my platoon commander, actually, Mr. Luard. He was the son of the colonel of the regiment, General Luard. Well, Mr. Luard asked for volunteers to learn to play rugby, and he said he would instruct them. And this was again done after tea. You know, you could volunteer to do it. And he was very good at instructing us, and the rugby in the battalion began to pick up. Our company got better. And where it used to only used to be maybe officers and senior NCOs who played it, we found that all ranks began to want to play, or not all of them, but quite a few of them wanted to learn the game because of this young officer. And I eventually finished up where I never knew a thing about except the shape of a rugby ball. I eventually played for the company, and then I played for the regimental second team. And others who hadn't played at all became regimental players.
So it was one officer having a great influence on...
He had a great influence, yes. But then he would be the last officer who came from home, you know. Other officers maybe who had been out a few years had got so stylized with the sporting activities of the unit, I would think that may be. And he came with new eyes, new ideas. And I had never known an officer, except for running, who would ever come out and offer to train men in the time. And he did it. He was a tallish lad, well made. And he showed us how to tackle, not only on other people, but he had straw sacks hanging from tree branches, and he would choose himself, he would choose how to do the tackle, and then he would supervise us doing the tackles. And then he would train us about to pass the ball, out of scrub, and most of the rules. And over a period of the time he was with us, which wasn't a great long time, we improved greatly. We didn't win anything, but our ability became better. Where we were always known as a football regiment, we met and played some fair teams in Bombay when we moved to Bombay. I recall playing three games against older men from civilians, but Bombay Gymkhana. Now their first team was a team which was composed mainly of international and ex-county players, because they were all either business managers or works managers or things like that, and they liked to play the game. And then the older ones, they liked to play the game, but they didn't like to go and play, say, our first team, because they were better players, well, not better players, but younger and quicker, and therefore it would be an unequal contest. And one of their members had approached our sports officer, could we not send a weaker team rather than the first team? And I played against those three times. Now, the first time we played, there was no score, and we enjoyed the game. The next time we played them, we had a player injured. It was accidental. And he was taken off, but he couldn't play anymore. Well, we were beaten 3-0 on that day. And these Gymkhana people, they were very good. And they said, oh, that wasn't a fair game. You didn't finish with 15 players. So we'll have to play you again. So the next time we played them, it was 3-3 again. But that was the kind of cooperation and friendliness. And I think it was that young officer who did it. I may be wrong. Somebody in the regiment later on may say, oh, he's talking tripe. But I don't think so. I think young Mr. Loward, I regret to say this about Mr. Loward. About 3 years later, when he transferred from the 2nd Battalion to the 1st Battalion, the 1st Battalion went to China when we came home from the Sudan, and he died very shortly after. I don't know why, but he died in China very shortly afterwards. When he came out, he was my platoon commander.
You were describing the sports and mentioned that the PT took place in the morning. When did the various games that you described, various competitions and so on, when did they take place?
Or sometime at a given time in the year, exactly a year after.
During the day, I mean, would that be in the evenings? Or?
Well, most of them were after tea, because it was usually too hot. You know, you did your physical training first thing on the morning, and then you would do your normal drills, parades. After breakfast, you would turn out. You may be on drill, you may be on field training, you know, the normal training which you would do. And then come midday, you would be finished. and then that would be the end of more or less your soldiering day, unless you were on fatigues or guard. If you had work to do, you would do it, and then if you were on guard, yeah, you would do the guard duties. But some guards were 24 hours and some guards were night guards, but the night guards sometimes supplemented the day guards, which doubled the strength of the guards because of incidents which had happened in India in the past, and these were safety measures.
Can you say what you're referring to when you say these incidents happened in the past? Why were the guards doubled by that?
Well, I can give that again, and I was involved, I got punished over this, and I felt really grieved over it. Two of us were punished, and the other lad had nothing to do whatever, and he got more punishment than I did. But this was it. A magazine guard at Barrackpore. Now, a regiment had been based there previously, not particularly just before us, but at some time previously, and they'd had one sentry on the magazine guard, and he'd been murdered by the natives. So the army had decided that the magazine guards would have two sentries instead of one. One on the guard room and one as a floating sentry, which patrolled right around the magazine and an area around the magazine. And the other sentry, which was the 24-hour sentry, would be on guard on the guard room veranda. This was one of the three guards which were in the camp. And one morning, about 2:20 in the morning, I saw, as I was on sentry duty, I saw this person on a bicycle. Now, it was some distance away, and it was in the night, although you had almost clear nights, you know, moonlight nights was really nearly like daylight. But I just couldn't distinguish who this person was. And I challenged him with the guard orders. Halt. Halt. Who comes there? And I got no answer. So the next order is, halt or I fire. Well, you had live ammunition. And I loaded the rifle. And he fell off his bike into the side of the road. And then he decided to say he was visiting rounds. Now then, I had taken cover, thinking it may be someone, knowing that the soldier had been murdered. I took cover behind a pillar and aimed my rifle towards him. And when he said he was visiting rounds, I called the guard out. Guard, turn out. Instead of stand to the guard, turn out, which is the usual. Emergency was guard, turn out. So all the rest of the sentries took their posts, which were known by guard orders, and the guard commander and the lance corporal of the guard came out. And the guard commander said to me, why have you called the guard out? I said, well, there's someone did not answer the challenge and only fell off a bicycle when I said I would fire. I said, no, he says he is visiting rounds. So when the officer did come, he was the odd officer of the day, he came, the guard was brought together to be inspected and everything else. But he said to the guard commander, you will charge that sentry for being off his post.
Was this the man who fallen off his bicycle?
Yes. He said, you will charge this man for being off his post. And the other sentry for not being alert. Well, the other sentry had gone patrolling away not a good distance, but a number of yards away from the guard room. He wouldn't have known what had happened. So next morning we were charged. We were both in different companies. My company commander couldn't try me because it was a guard charge, and the other lad couldn't be tried. The moment I went into the CO, I got 8-day CB. Wouldn't he just said yes or no. I said no. He said 8-day CB, and the other lad went in and he said, because you're the older soldier, he said you'll get 10-day CB. And that was two men who got punished for an officer not obeying a first command. And I thought that was one of the times when I really believed discipline was wrong.
What did you think of your officers in the DLI?
Most of the officers were good, but I would say, except for that incident, I would have taken every officer as being, you know, some of them were hard. Oh yes, some of them were real soldiers, and some of them were real hard men. And if they could catch you out, they would catch you out. But they would do it fair, not like we'd been done. Not like this other lad and I had been done. And the other lad, poor lad, he got 10 days CB. I was the one who did the challenge, but he was nowhere near it, and yet he got 10 days CB because he was an older soldier than me. The CO said he should have been looking after me, which was a contradiction to the guard orders. But then you had no, you know, you couldn't appeal against it. You just accepted it, and you were punished. You did your CV.
What did you think of that officer in particular? Had you come across him before?
After that, I would never have had much faith in him. And I think that turned out to be quite a number of the men of our company and the other lads' company. I think they felt we had been wrongly done by when they got to know what had happened. And it soon gets out, you know, because the other sentries say, and sergeants speak in the sergeant's mess, and the warrant officers get to know. And when I went in, the other lads were surprised, why were you put on peg? And I told them, and they could hardly believe it, that an officer would do that.
Why do you think he did do that?
I don't know. That's inexplicable. I can tell you another incident. Two officers, they were sitting in the mess having a glass of something, when one of our waiters, and he belonged to our company, he was in the officer's mess as a waiter, officer's mess staff, and he heard these two officers betting each other a glass of spirit for who could catch the most sentries out. So there was a detachment at the Ishapore rifle factory, and the lads there got to know that one of these officers was on duty that particular day, 24 hours. So they were always alert, and on this particular night, around midnight, there was someone trying to climb over the wall instead of carrying out the normal procedures of ringing a bell, I think it was, or knocking on the door of the outer door, away from the guard room. This soldier saw two hands on the wall, and he knew who it was. I'll be quite honest about this. He knew that it was an orderly officer trying to catch him out. So he did exactly the same as I had done. He challenged, and when he got no answer, he fired around. But he didn't fire to hit the officer, but he fired around to let him know that he was there. And there was no charge made against that soldier. And strangely enough to say, the two officers, one later became the colonel of the regiment as a major general.
What was his name?
I'll try and remember it in a moment. But the other officer was killed saving his men in front of the Maginot Line in 1940. They went out on a fighting patrol, and they met the Germans, and he could speak German. He was, when I knew him, he was Mr. Fitzfox Davis, and he could speak German. What was the other one's name? The other one became general. He was a lieutenant. They were both lieutenants at the time. But Mr. Fox Davis could speak German, and he'd been out on a fighting patrol in front of the Maginot Line in 40, and they came in contact with the enemy, and he was able to talk German to the Germans while his men withdrew to safety. But the Germans caught up to him, and he was killed. He was killed in action. That was a brave action. You know, that was typical of that happening, trying to climb over a wall, you know, to try and catch out. No, that's what I mean by saying he was a hard officer, but he was a good officer. You know, they would try and catch you out in peacetime. They would be very strict in discipline. But it just goes, you know, to prove that he was also a good officer in when the time was there.
Did you have much contact with your officers? Did you see them very often?
You saw them every day. You would be on parade with you. You would. They'll be there from 9 o'clock. They maybe wouldn't be there on the morning unless it was an adjutant's or a CO's parade. They would be on parade then.
Did you have any opportunity to speak to them?
Yes, if you wanted to ask some questions, or he might come and talk to you, he might ask you how you were getting on, or what was the thing. Yes, I think our officers are as good as the next. I think I can prove that again, you know. Some years later, when I returned to England, I was at the dental centre at Deep Cut, and I'd had two teeth extracted, and I was walking back from the dental centre to the canteen with a lad from the Manchester Regiment and the one from the Duke of Cornwall's Regiment. And the three of us was walking to the canteen after having dental treatment, and there was a minister walking down. He had his collar back to front, but he was in civilian clothes. Well, we always called them padres. We were ordered to call every minister, irrespective of what he was. If he wore his collar back to front, we realised he was a minister. It was always padre. And this padre stopped me because I was wearing the Durham's badge. And he said, I thought the Durhams had gone overseas. I said, yes, that was the 1st Battalion. But I said, we're the 2nd Battalion, who've just come from overseas. And he said, what do you think about your officers? Oh, I said, they're like the rest of the army. Not much use, or, you know, just something to say. He said, well, I've got something to tell you, soldier. And I never knew this man's name. I never saw him again. He said, the officers of your regiment are the best officers I have ever known look after the soldiers' welfare. He said, the officers look after your married quarters or married people, and he said, the welfare they look after you soldiers. He said, I've never known another regiment like it. And that was from a complete stranger. I'd never known it.
Did he qualify that statement by explaining what he meant?
No, he didn't say any more, but he just said they were the best officers he'd ever known. And that was a Deep Cut. Well, I believe the 1st Battalion was stationed. No, they were stationed in Woking. We took the barracks over from them at Woking. That was between Nuphill and St John's in Surrey. And
was this man, do you think, an army chaplain, an army padre?
I wouldn't know, but he must have known a lot about the forces, because he picked me out straight away as Durham's. Now, he must have known, because the cab badge only says DLI. It doesn't say Durham's or anything else, it just says DLI. And he said Durham's, so he must know something about the armed forces. It was interesting. I forget when it happened.
I can't remember the next one now.
But there was another incident where a similar thing happened to me.
You mentioned earlier on that you were on 24-hour guard duties sometimes. Where did these take place?
Well, in your unit and on detachment from the unit.
When you say detachment from the unit, where would that be?
Or it could be miles away. One instance which I can recall was a place called Kossipore, which was between Barrackpore and Calcutta. It was an arms factory, and it was normally not done by our regiment. It was usually done by the regiment in Calcutta. But as training, you know, when units had to go into training, a battalion in training, other battalions would have to take over the duties, which was normal, a normal practice. It might have been an Indo regiment or the Gurkhas. There was a Gurkha regiment stationed not so far away from Kossipore, so it may have been the Gurkhas' duty, and they may have gone on, you know, battalion training or some training.
And at Kossipore, what were you guarding?
Just the factory, you know. You would just do your duty. There would be one sentry on the guard room and the other one would just wander around, what we used to call a floating sentry. But you were armed. You had, I think it was 20 rounds of ball ammunition for daylight, and then you had buckshot for night. You change your rifles to smooth bore from retreat, dark to reveille, which was daylight. You had buckshot, which is more efficient for through the night because you couldn't see your target most probably.
How many men would be on guard duty?
There would be six privates, two NCOs. On battalion guard duty, there would be the same, but there'd be a bugler who did the calls, all the calls, 24 hours a day.
And how was the duty split up over the 24 hours?
2 hours on duty, 4 hours off.
And two men would be on duty at any one
two,
time?
Two men on duty, on headquarter guards or the arms guards. Now, on places like a camp guard or a magazine guard, there would be one sentry on duty at daytime, but there would be an additional sentry at night time, which would bring the guards up to six and two NCOs, six privates and two NCOs.
Why were there variations between a battalion guard, a camp guard and a magazine guard?
Well, they were not classed as being important, or they could be defended in daytime, you say. There was always troops around in daytime and the bugler on the headquarter guard. Where at night time, in the darkness, as I explained, I think, earlier, that a sentry had been murdered when there was only one at Barrackpore on the magazine guard at night time. So they doubled the guard at night time, but they kept the single guard during the day.
And you mentioned a battalion guard a moment ago. What is a battalion guard? What was that?
Well, the battalion guard's always the show guard everywhere. In every regiment of the British Army, it's what is called the headquarter guard. Well, there you have your detention cells. You know, where you've got your prisoners, men who are doing detention. And not in military prisons, but in so many days punishment they get. And where the Provo have it as their headquarters. Mm-hmm. It's about all for that. Just a headquarter guard. You can't explain it any other way. As I've said.
A camp guard would be more general, would it? Would be.
Well, a camp guard would be to camp. Now, at Barrackpore, there wasn't enough barracks for to contain the whole battalion if when it was together. So you had a camp guard, which was tented. So you'd have sentries there. Instead of having a building as your guard room, you'd just have a tent. And then when the battalion split up again, when it wasn't together for battalion training, then they would just strike the tented camp. It may be there just maybe 2 or 3 months in a year. But, for a battalion to get together to train and for everything else, which normal goes on, mobilisation or anything like that, you got your battalion together maybe for 3 months in the year. Maybe less, I would think less than that. Because of the considerable distances of travelling.
Yes, I'd like to explore that actually.